You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hello, everyone. This is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our weekly podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm glad you're with us. Be here every week and tell your friends about us. Well, the calendar keeps moving along, my friends, as we head toward arguably the most important election in America in modern times. And there's all sorts of issues. I bet if I said to you, what are the major issues, we would probably all agree on them. There's things like securing the border. I mean, that's a big issue, a really huge debates taking place about that. There's the whole question about our economy. A lot of people are being left behind. We've got runaway inflation. Young people can't afford to buy that important first house. A lot of frustration about that. You can't forget, obviously, the abortion issue, the sanctity of life issue. More money is being spent in this campaign by the pro-abortion side to promote abortion than on any other issue. And I've talked about that at great length. It's really kind of disgusting, actually, when you think about it. There's also the issue of our foreign policy. There's a perception around the world that we've grown weak. Our military has declined. We can't fill the ranks. People are worried that we're going to bumble our way into a third world war. All of these things are extremely important. But I wanted to share with you today an issue that, in its own way, may be even more important than these issues, certainly as important as all of those, and it's not getting nearly the attention that it ought to get. Now, if you had a good civics teacher or went to a decent school, you know a little bit about our Constitution, our founding documents, and you probably know quite a bit about the First Amendment to the Constitution. In the First Amendment, the most important freedoms we have are listed in a very specific way, and it's very short. Let me just refresh your memory. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Sounds kind of like archaic language, but what it's saying is the Congress can't make a law that tells you you have to worship God in a particular way, or you have to go to a specific church or a specific denomination. Nobody would want that. But the First Amendment makes it clear we don't do that in America. You're not allowed to do that. The sentence goes on to say that Congress also can't make any law prohibiting the free exercise of religion. That means that we as Christians or whatever our faith is, we get to seek God and worship God as our heart and soul leads us to do. This is one of the fundamental rights of the American Republic. And then it goes on to list the other rights. The next one is the freedom of speech. Now, I can actually make a strong case that without the freedom of speech, you can't have the freedom of religion. Think about it a second. If your pastor or priest or rabbi or imam can't say from the pulpit what the holy book says, can't talk to you about what God requires of us and whatever faith we follow, well, then you can't have the freedom of religion. So without the freedom of speech, you can't have freedom of religion. And then the First Amendment goes on to guarantee the freedom of the press. I could spend a couple hours on that because there's some evidence we really don't have that anymore. But also the right of the people to peacefully assemble. That means you can go to a demonstration. You can hold up signs. You can chant things about what you feel, good or in agreement with the government or against the government. And then finally, the right to petition the government. That not only means getting a piece of paper and saying, senators, quit doing this, signed Gary Bauer. It means petitioning in all the ways that we're allowed to do that, through our speech, through voting, through demonstrations, all the things that we've been talking about. Now, in recent years, I think a lot of Americans still don't quite get this. A lot of these freedoms are coming under attack. Certainly, we've gone into great depth about the freedom of religion and the restrictions that government's trying to put on that. But this fundamental right to the freedom of speech is also under attack. And let me just remind you of some of the examples. We went through the horrible pandemic, the COVID pandemic. And as I'm sure you remember, because it was a new disease and it was scary and people were very worried, there was a lot of debate about how do we handle this disease. And there were differences of opinion. Welcome to America. We disagree. And this was one of these cases where because it was new and the experts didn't know everything, having a debate was a good thing. So there were debates about whether the vaccine actually would work or whether there were hidden dangers about the vaccine that couldn't possibly be known because no one had had the vaccine before. And certainly nobody knew what would happen a year after the vaccine or 5 years or 10 years because we had just developed the vaccine. There were differences of opinion about whether masking would really stop the virus or not. There were heated conversations about children because a lot of the early evidence showed, and it continues to show, that unless a child had really serious health problems, COVID, thank God, did not affect children as much as it affected older Americans, particularly older Americans who were ill. So all of these things were being debated in all of the glory of the American Republic. Our right to shout at each other, to write letters to the editor, to have demonstrations, all that was playing out. But we also all remember very quickly powerful forces in government and in social media tried to shut down opinions that were considered inappropriate or not what the experts thought or opinions that could be quote-unquote dangerous. Now, here's the real irony about this. The reason the Founding Fathers promoted the freedom of speech is that they believed in arguing, in debating, in speaking, we ultimately find the truth. That bad ideas, wrong ideas would lose out to truthful ideas. Well, we saw in COVID how that works because the experts and the government shut down a lot of opinions. And lo and behold, we found out later after COVID that the dissenters were right. Masks are a very dubious value. For some people, the vaccines did cause problems. And in fact, there's some medical opinion today that the vaccines might have been counterproductive in some ways. There was even a debate about where did the virus come from. And the accepted establishment opinion was it probably was transmitted by a bat to a human being and then spread all over the world. Now there's pretty much of a consensus that what the dissenters had been saying, that the disease came out of a secret lab in Wuhan, China, communist China, that is probably where the virus originated. So a lot of people got hurt. People lost their jobs. People were punished. People were censored during the emergency of COVID. You'll remember a couple of years ago, there was another big debate in America. Parents, and it's a little unclear how they started finding out, but parents began to realize that their little sons and daughters in schools, particularly in public schools, were being exposed to graphic information about adult sexual activity. Not only heterosexual sexual questions, but things in the LGBTQ agenda. And when parents found this out, they were not happy. You know, these are sensitive subjects. A lot of parents correctly believe, in the view of JDFI, that on these sensitive subjects, parents should be the ones to talk to their children. when the child, according to the parents, is at the maturity level to hear the information. But the establishment opinion was, and the opinion of the teacher unions, and the opinion of the Biden-Harris administration was, no, the public schools get to decide when your child is exposed to this material. Well, parents went to school board meetings, and God bless them, some of them actually yelled. You know, you can reread that First Amendment again about the freedom of speech. It doesn't say you have the freedom of speech unless you raise your voice. In America, you are allowed to raise your voice. You're allowed to yell at your government. You can go to a school board meeting and say to a school board member, I'm going to vote against you at the next election, and you're doing a lousy thing teaching my child these things about sex, and you didn't ask me as their parent whether I agreed or not. That is the quintessential American that has the right to speak up against government officials at all levels of government. Well, do you remember what happened when this parental movement sprung up around the nation? The government couldn't just say, okay, we're outlawing parents from going to school board meetings and exercising their freedom of speech. That would have blown up in their face if they would have tried something so obvious. Here's what they did instead. They had a press conference by the attorney general and the head of the FBI, and they said, you know, some of these school board members are getting nasty letters in the mail, and they're getting phone calls where people say bad things over the phone and hang up on them. And some of the school board members and some of the teachers are beginning to get a little afraid because parents are so angry. So we have set up a special 800 number where your neighbors or a teacher or a school board member can call this special 800 number and turn you, mom and dad, in as being a potential domestic terrorist. Wow. Can you think of something more intimidating? And it breaks my heart to tell you that while we all fought against that and criticized it, Dr. Dobson led the way, JDFI was very vocal about it, many groups spoke up and said, this is outrageous, this is America. The 800 number stayed in place. And if you go back and look, there was a massive drop-off in parents willing to go to school board meetings. And it's understandable. If you're some guy, you know, with a job in middle America trying to pay your bills, you can't afford to lose that job. You don't want somebody saying, you're on a special FBI terrorist list. That would be horrible. So the government intimidated people out of exercising their freedom of speech. That should never happen in America. Another example, and this is an ongoing thing, it's the labeling of dissenting opinions as being hate speech. Let's say you're one of those Neanderthals, I'm proudly one of them, that says men cannot get pregnant. Why would we say something like that? Because they can't. I can't even believe we're having this discussion. Men cannot get pregnant. So if you say that now, though, you're a transphobe. That means you hate people who are transgender. No, it just means you believe in biology. But again, it intimidates people. What if you say, the masses of people, millions of them crossing our border, there's a large number of them that are criminals and killers and rapists, and they're committing crimes all over America. All of what I just said is absolutely provable true. There is a migrant crime wave going on in America right now. You read the stories every day. But if you say this, there are powerful forces that will try to say, oh, you just say that because you're a bigot. You don't like the race or the ethnic background of the people that are coming into America, so you hide your racism by saying you want a secure border. These tactics are being used to abridge your freedom of speech, to shut down one of the most important rights that we have. Now, just in the last couple of days, we saw another example of this at all places at a White House press briefing. A recent press briefing went off the rails. A reporter had the audacity to ask the White House press secretary, how did the Biden-Harris administration deal with the contradiction of, on the one hand, being able to announce that they were going to send $158 million on an emergency basis to help the suffering people of the nation of Lebanon, but that when it came to helping hurricane victims in North Carolina and Tennessee, Georgia, and other states from Hurricane Helene, they might run out of money? So this reporter said, don't you worry about how that looks? What was the reaction of the White House press secretary? She got angry. She told the reporter that his entire question was misinformation and that it was dangerous. The head of the emergency operations of the federal government over the weekend, interesting, used the same language. She said that the criticism of the emergency relief efforts was dangerous. Well, what do they mean? Dangerous to who? The danger we all see is what's happening to our fellow Americans. People with no clean drinking water, no electricity, their homes have been destroyed. They can't feed their babies, etc. And we're being lectured by the federal government that if we speak up about this, it's dangerous. Well, what they're suggesting is that people might get angry at federal employees and we could start yelling at them. Who knows? Maybe we might vote somebody out of office. But this is really important, my friends. If every time we criticize the government, we're told it's dangerous because somebody might write a nasty letter or be angry or raise their voice, you are no longer living in America. We would have crossed a dangerous line, the kind of line which was crossed a long time ago in places like communist China and Cuba and Venezuela, where people in those countries are not allowed to criticize government officials. It's one of the reasons, by the way, that a lot of those people tried to come to America. Now, you know, I talked about a number of things that have happened recently in recent years, but something's happened in the last couple of weeks that really has set off alarm bells to me, because some very prominent people on the left are signaling quite directly that they intend to severely limit the freedom of speech in America. And I want to share some of these quotes with you. Let's start with tech giant Bill Gates.
We should have free speech, but if you're inciting violence, if you're causing people not to take vaccines, you know, where are those boundaries that even the U.S. Should, you know, have rules? And then if you have rules, you know, what is it? Is there some AI that encodes those rules? Because you have billions of activity and, you know, if you catch it a day later, the harm is done.
So did you catch that, my friends? So Bill Gates says, yeah, you know, the First Amendment, he kind of mentioned the First Amendment, it's okay. But like, when you hear the word but after the word First Amendment, the person speaking is getting ready to tell you why the First Amendment's not good or why it needs to be cut back. So Bill Gates says, if you are inciting violence, see, that's that theme again, that if you're criticizing government officials, somebody might get angry, so you're inciting violence. And did you notice the other thing he raised as an example here? If you're causing people not to take the vaccine, how can you cause somebody not to take the vaccine? You could argue about whether you think the vaccine is going to be effective or not, or whether it has side effects that are too risky, but it's still up to each American to listen to the arguments and make their decision. But that's not good enough for Bill Gates. This is a very powerful guy. He's a billionaire. And he's saying if somebody heard you criticize the vaccine And then you didn't take the vaccine. That's just unacceptable in America. No, what's unacceptable is Bill Gates trying to shut down debate. Now, here's a name that most of us will recognize, Hillary Clinton. She came very close to becoming president not many years ago. And here's what she said in recent days.
But we now know that that was an overly simple view, that if the platforms, whether it's Facebook or Twitter X or Instagram or TikTok, whatever they are, if they don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose total control. And it's not just the social and psychological effects, it's real harm.
Did you catch that phrase? We lose total control from the freedom of speech. Gosh, somebody needs to tell Hillary that that's the purpose of the freedom of speech. That's why the founders gave us the freedom of speech, so that government could not have total control, that government always had to deal in America with free men and women that were able to speak their mind and, shockingly, even be wrong sometimes. Hillary Clinton doesn't like that. She's concerned that they're going to lose total control. Here's another one, John Kerry. He is the climate czar right now. And here's a couple of things he said at some globalist conference recently.
You know, there's a lot of discussion now about how you curb those entities in order to guarantee that you're going to have, you know, some accountability on facts, et cetera. Our First Amendment stands as a major block to the ability to be able to just, you know, hammer it out of existence. So what we need is to win the ground, win the right to govern by hopefully having, winning enough votes that you're free to be able to implement change.
I don't even know where to begin. He complains that people self-select where they go to get their news. Wild guess about what he's referring to there. He's referring to people that tend to watch Fox News, conservatives. He doesn't like that. Well, my goodness, he's saying, if they only go to one place to get the news, and the news they're getting isn't, in his view, right, well, that just can't be allowed. And then he says the freedom of speech is a major impediment to getting consensus in America. Holy moly. That's an opinion, again, more comfortable in Beijing or Moscow or Havana or Caracas, not in America. We don't silence people because the only way we can get a consensus is to stop dissenting opinion. And then at the very end there, he says why I'm bringing up this whole issue now as we're going into election. We need to win the ground, he said. We need to win the votes. You need to win the ground. You need to win the votes. Why? Because these people want to use their political power, when they get it, to restrict your freedom of speech. And finally, here's a guy you have heard a lot about recently, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, the vice presidential running mate of Kamala Harris. Listen to this brief comment.
There's no guarantee to free speech on misinformation or hate speech, and especially around our democracy.
It was a quick comment, as I said, but it says all you needed to know. There is no guarantee of freedom of speech. Well, actually, there is. It's called the First Amendment. But maybe, I don't know, maybe he was doing us a favor. Maybe he was signaling that there's no guarantee to the freedom of speech because their intention is to take away, in serious ways, the freedom of speech. So what I'm asking you to do, my friends, is double down on your prayers, double down on your discernment. Yes, The sanctity of life is at stake. Our economy needs to be better. We need to be safer. We need to secure our borders. But I would submit to you, and so would a lot of other people, important people that have left the political left in recent months and are now coming to our side because they suddenly realize that the basic liberties of America, the freedom of religion, the freedom of assembly, and perhaps most importantly, the freedom to speak our mind, even if we end up being wrong occasionally, that freedom is central to the American Republic. Without it, we are no longer America, no longer free men and women. You have to vote in a few weeks. The Republic depends upon it. Thanks for being with me on Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Come back next week.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.